And good day, everybody. This is Patricia Corey, and you've tuned in to Beyond the Matrix, the radio program that dares you, I would say compels you, to think outside the box of convention. And boy, are we going to be out of that box today. I can't wait to start my interview with the amazing Laura Eisenhower, who's my guest today. So if you've got anybody nearby that wants their mind expanded, grab them and put them in a seat next to you and have them come on a journey with us into the dimensions of reality that we are slowly, sometimes quickly, beginning to expand into and understand. Now, before I bring her on, I have to make comments because that's who I am. And I have a little thing that's irritating me. It's called the November 9th FEMA control frequency test. And I just want to bring to your attention that, of course, it's very typical that the powers that be would be using the numbers 11 and 9. I wonder if anybody got that. Yes, it's true. 11-9 is when this is coming down. I hope you'll have a little laugh about that and get it. So pay attention to that. And it's like Comet Elenin, you know? I was like, Elenin, that sounds like 11. And when you spell it backwards, it's 9-le, or even closer, 9-l, 9-11. All this stuff to keep us in fear. And we're going to be talking about fear. One of my favorite subjects, because fear has no place for us at this amazing time of transformation. So as we get it, that we don't have to be in fear, more and more lights are going on. All right, that's my blurb. Now, I just want to apologize if I sound like Kermit the Frog, but I've got a little cold here. So if you hear my voice crack, that's why. Right, I've got Laura Eisenhower on. She was supposed to be on 2 weeks ago, but we had a little problem with timing, so I apologize for that. But she's here now. Laura describes herself as a cosmic mythologist, a global alchemist, and a clairvoyant healer. And of course, she is the great-granddaughter of Dwight David Eisenhower. She is on a profound mission to complete his legacy and reveal our true origins with extraordinary intuitive gifts, which are deeply connected with the Magdalene and Sophia energies of love and wisdom. These two forces connect many dots that are coming into our awareness now more than ever as our solar system aligns with the galactic plane in 2011. From an early age, Laura's been engaged with some extraordinary experiences. You can just imagine, right? Taking on some extreme challenges relating to many things that carried over from Ike's presidency. And she has confronted the battles he was up against that still linger, and even some of the agreements and insights he had that never reached fruition, such as, of course, his ideas and knowledge about the military-industrial complex, which he warned us about. We'll be talking about that. The global elite, the Mars colonies in recruitment, ETs, and the agendas of the artificial and unethical power structures that we know are at work in our world. We're going to explore these matters, which you all know are near and dear to my heart on tonight's show. So welcome, Laura.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's a delight to have you and an honor. Thank you for being here.
Thanks.
Laura, obviously the first thing that comes to mind and questions that I have, with the great honor of being able to talk to you directly, would start probably with the experience of being in the family of President Eisenhower. And I just can't help but go immediately to the question of his let's say, well, I don't want to call it so-called because I do believe it occurred, his encounter with aliens at Holloman Air Force back in base back in, I think it was 1954?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very curious as to what this would mean for the legend that would have been carried down to you being a member of the family. Can you expand on that and tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, this was definitely something that was meant to be covered up. I mean, I think people are familiar with the rumor that he went to a dentist appointment and that none of this ever happened. And so what's interesting is that in my family, they still hold on to that rumor. And they do it with quite a lot of sincerity, because as a clairvoyant type, I mean, we're all clairvoyant, but as somebody who's really put a lot of focus on clear seeing in my third eye, you know, I kind of listen to that and I'm wondering, are they hiding something from me? Is this some sort of cover up that is supposed to keep my generation quiet? And it seems it's very sincere that they really truly believe in that rumor. So what's kind of been handed to me is to look much deeper and to investigate where they really, you know, weren't able to go, as their focuses were on other things. So what's kind of been handed down to me is not just the interest and curiosity to discover the truth about, not just the rumor of him encountering extraterrestrials, but the rumor that he actually did not and was at a dentist appointment, and to really just, you know, tune in on a family level and tune in on a researcher level and just my own life experience to really find out, you know, what the truth is. So that was one aspect of what seemed to land in my lap as part of my mission and experience. And the other one was to be involved, which obviously, you know, I don't recall signing up for, but it is a part of the larger story, of this Mars recruitment I was involved in in 2006, which started to really shed a lot of light on this contact that he must have had with extraterrestrials, not just once, but what I'm gathering is three times, with three different races, the last of which happened in the 1960s with the Venetians, that we don't hear a whole lot about. So kind of putting that rumor to side, just sort of accepting it as truth that this occurred with extraterrestrials, understanding, you know, the influence of UFOs and extraterrestrials in our ancient history and in the Nazi, you know, party's use of certain technologies and what they knew. I've just sort of adopted it as a reality in a sense, because the Mars recruitment had to do with Alternative 3, which was established in the 1950s as a backup plan for the human race, which I believe was communicated by the extraterrestrials, because we did not and do not have the means to travel to Mars or to be able to, you know, embark on such a mission without assistance, I believe, from higher races. And further into my research, I discovered that certain gray alien races were a part of trying to implement this agenda to go to Mars. And we hear about whistleblowers like Dan Burrish, who was a scientist to MJ-12, knows a lot about what happens at Area 51, shed a lot of light on this. And also a whistleblower named James Casbolt, who pretty much validated and stated that these treaties with extraterrestrials and the government began in the 1940s with Roosevelt. And that's when we were pretty much signed over as, you know, giving the green flag to allow abductions, which of course got out of control because they were supposed to share the amount of numbers. It was supposed to be something somewhat controlled, and it got out of control. And then these treaties, you know, are upgraded or renewed every 10 years. And Eisenhower stepped into something that was already in the works as the Draco reptilian influence had already established itself in the government. So just to kind of conclude, you know, my answer, there's just a lot to it. We're not just talking, you know, treaties and exchanges of technologies. We're talking about very sophisticated agendas to use our tax dollars and use our resources to set up a colony elsewhere, while technologies like HARP and, you know, a lot of different activities that lead to negative frequencies being emitted into the environment, into the grid lines of our planetary body, are pushing for the catastrophes in order for this agenda to take place, which is what the extraterrestrials, particularly the Greys as future human selves, using UFO as time travel machines, go back to reestablish the treaty and agreement in order to keep this timeline alive, which is not a timeline we want. So that is why I broke free of the recruitment, in order to establish, you know, the real timeline, the positive timeline, and the one where the human spirit is the one that calls the shots.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah, it's kind of a mouthful.
It is. I've had Andy Bejago on, and I've been on and interviewed by and had on Alfred Weber several times. And so I have brought forward the information about Andy Bejago's experience as a child and his experience going through this time travel equipment, let's call it, or machine that he declares was a CIA structure, or his father apparently was a big shot in the military, and he was recruited then as a child. And he talks about, of course, I'm sure you're aware, he talks about being in Mars, being in an underground civilization for many times back then. So when you're talking about the Mars recruitment program, you are not speaking of that. You're speaking of something much more recent that occurred with you, right?
Right. And well, Andrew and I have determined that this is all sort of a part of the same thing, but his generation was handling more the preparation, more the experimentation of, you know, can you teleport a child? What are the side effects? What happens? In a sense, he feels, I don't know if he used the term guinea pig, but, you know, that's kind of what they were doing. They were doing experiments and using children, you know, as vulnerable sort of open beings that could, you know, look at future events and report back and, you know, determine without the bias of, you know, human adult belief systems, you know, what they were seeing and, you know, with the going into the past, going into the future with the chronovision. And then, of course, like I was saying, the teleportation to see how they would react on the surface of Mars. And, you know, he had intense training programs with folks like Ed Dames in order to, you know, watch his back and know how to handle being on the surface of Mars. For me, it wasn't so much the preparation. I was recruited to be a permanent colonist, which is what Andrew's program was kind of, it seemed to be setting up. You know, they were part of the building blocks of refurbishing the colony from ancient ruins. But I think by the time Andrew was there, it was a little bit more than refurbished because he was, you know, in there. But, you know, by the time my recruitment rolled around, I was hearing things and overhearing conversations that had to do with terraforming and making the surface of Mars more inhabitable. So it seemed like they were, you know, on a chronological, even though we're not really in linear time, that his project was, you know, a prerequisite to the recruitment project. And I don't know anybody else who was really recruited. But the thing that was interesting in 1972, Andrew in the Project Pegasus program was told that he would be working with me. And they've said my name and this was in 1972, a year before I was born. So even before I was born, I was located through Quantum Access Technologies and was told, and Andrew got information about this. So when Andrew and I met and we've been working together, you know, as colleagues since I broke my story, he mentioned, oh my goodness, you know, in 1972, your name came up. And then, of course, the story with Alfred Weber and how his book time traveled, we realized that all three of us were kind of in this quantum entanglement and that, you know, there was something that they had seen that merged all of our work in the truth movement. So it's all very interesting. And I think because I was located in Project Pegasus in 72, this is a clear sign that this was all a part of the same thing because Ed Dames has an affiliation with the recruiters that were behind my recruitment. With the people behind my recruitment, rather.
And I'd like to talk about that in a minute, but I would like, just so that everybody's on the same page with you, would you describe to us what you mean by quantum access technology?
Well, yeah. Oh, explain that? Yeah. Well, things like looking glass technologies, they work like they're cylinder seals. It's like a Sumerian technology. It's a little bit after Sumerian times. And basically, it gave codes and information and instructions how to locate wormholes and stargates and what that is all about. And they found that using that technology allowed them to see into the future and into the past. So they started using it to gain information and to sort of manipulate timelines because if they could see certain things happening, similar to getting a psychic reading, but, you know, deciding to change events, they could alter future events and they could plant things in the past and sort of play around with all of that. That's what the Illuminati and certain aspects of MJ-12 use with the looking glass technologies. Well, it seemed that DARPA and Project Pegasus had similar access, and the quantum entanglement or the quantum access technologies have to do with, you know, time travel and being able to locate past and future events, which allowed them to see some of these activities. The chronovision is what Andrew used and was able to see, you know, future presidents. But, you know, there's 8 different types of teleportation and time travel technology. So that's, you know, definitely something that could go into a lot of different territory. And he's definitely more the expert. I'm trying to get as close to the facts as I can. And that's basically, you know, kind of a larger picture summary of you know, where we're all involved. More of the chronovision looking glass type technologies, not the actual teleportation. Like he went, you know, into future, into the past where his whole physical being was there. What he was able to, you know, see through like the chair, the Montauk chair, were, you know, projections into the future and into the past, which is similar to the chronovision.
Amazing. So obviously anyone who's plugged in at the moment might may be asking themselves, well, if the Illuminati can look into the future, certainly they've got the technology and the training with remote vision, et cetera, et cetera. Why are they so set on trashing the planet? And obviously one answer is that they're planning to migrate to Mars. But what is the deal? What is your perception of why they're hell-bent to destroy the ecology and the balance of this great goddess.
Well, it's all the attack on the feminine, and it goes back to, you know, ancient mythology has to do with the formation of the lower creator god, who is so bent on having control and so bent on keeping us from our true origins and blocking us from the mother force that it doesn't care what it needs to do to separate us, to throw us into trauma and into fear and into separation mentality. That all these agendas not only are in the political world, they're in the religious world, they're in our educational systems, they're, you know, it's through the media, and everything has been infiltrated, and it's very much a reptilian energy, very demonic. Very much without morals. It's similar to a cancer cell. It doesn't have any care at all for the organism and its well-being. It's all about self-preservation and, you know, the desire to live and thrive, but it can only thrive off of weakness, off of fear, off of things that that organism is choosing to do to itself that is somewhat destructive. So we kind of have to take responsibility and see where our weaknesses are that allow these parasitic forces to have such control. And each person can say on some level, well, I guess I'm feeding the system when I do this. I guess I'm feeding it when I do that. And that's an element and an aspect of ourselves that we're giving away, you know, our power away. And so for them, you know, I look at the planetary body, you know, it's an organism, it's a goddess, it's a cosmic multidimensional being. It's, you know, it's humanity affects its health. You know, it acts as almost its immune system or its negation of having the ability to have a strengthened immune system. And the imbalance of the masculine and feminine energies makes it very vulnerable to attack, to having leaks in its own aura, which allows darker entities to come in. And humanity has a choice. Are we guardians? Are we protectors? Are we taking responsibility? Are we doing our part as an extension of Gaia, as an extension of cosmic intelligence? Or are we sort of going into this false agenda and false programming, allowing ourselves to feed that instead, which become the cancer, which becomes, you know, the symptoms that we see that, you know, produce poisons and extinctions. And, you know, it's the sabotaging of our own spirit. It's the sabotaging of all of this. And, you know, there's something that always shows up when we do that. And our personal lives and our own personal health is a great example of how, you know, our micro world shows the same principles and laws of how we're invaded, we're controlled, and we're attacked. And, you know, each one of us has the choice to take charge. As a collective conscious, that's where we are. So, you know, this reptilian demonic energy in the global elite, this is, you know, connected to patriarchy, connected to the powerful Mars, willful warrior, but not, you know, warrior is in spirit warrior, warrior is in warmonger. And what my mission or my focus is to raise the vibration of Mars into divine will, because that's still connected to power, but it's power that's integrated into higher self. And that's why we have to, you know, really recognize our part in it and how we can integrate and transform and bring it to a higher level, you know, because it'll either transmute those beings or they'll flee and go back to the abyss, which is where these dark rituals have pulled them out of. I mean, they do specific rituals to invoke and to conjure up these demons to do this kind of stuff. And because they have access to all the different stargates, and they have time control technologies and they have bases on all these other planets, they don't really care what happens to this one, because in their eyes, they have what they need to terraform, to, you know, to just run amok and, you know, make dark, you know, like the dark star, turn it into, you know, something that's been completely enslaved, and they don't see it, you know, and honor it as a sacred being. And so we're all stepping up and taking charge, because none of us want to be controlled. It's the same thing we do in abusive relationships or in, you know, oppressive situations. We say, you know, this is at a cost to our soul's freedom. And this is where it's catalyzing us to be where we are right now with the Occupy movement and everything else. And it's just simply just has no morals. It wants control. And the thing is, they use technologies for immortality, whereas us as divine beings have a natural ascension. They can't access that. They don't know how to do that because they're not willing to surrender to their higher self or to even access that spark within themselves to illuminate it. And so their whole deal, you know, with the UFOs and the Greys, particularly as agents of the reptilians, they want Earth to be their home base. And they'll go off planet and they'll go to underground bases while they do this sort of cleansing to kind of return, you know, and use technologies to maybe restore aspects of it to then rule. Or, you know, take it elsewhere. But the whole point is it's about power and control. And so these technologies give them a sense of immortality. They know that if they die, they'll probably most definitely have to experience what the creator and source energy has in store for them, which is a purification and experience of, you know, what we might consider, you know, just the scales of justice in the universe that'll, you know, need to set them straight. And because they're in fear of their own death, because they don't want to face the true creator, which they're trying to veil us from, the only thing that they can really think of doing and the only real way that they can keep themselves alive is through these technologies, through transferring souls from one body to another. I mean, their technologies are so advanced to keep them from having to go through the death cycle that all these treaties and all that they're doing is their own sort of system of rebirth or reincarnation. Like the Greys that visited the government, the P-52s and P-45s, that stands for 52,000 years into the future or 45,000 years into the future. The Greys are future human selves that have already gone off planet or to underground bases and have degenerated and become the form of what a Grey alien looks like. So they come back in order to justify what they've become, to make treaties with the government, to be like ensured that they will have abductions and this and that, so they can start to tweak with our genetics to restore their race, which survived the cataclysms. But see, we're in a totally different timeline. We don't go through those kind of catastrophes. We don't turn into Greys. We're naturally on the path of ascension. But they want to take as many of us into their program as possible, where that's just a choice for us. We just simply need to know the traps. And so what they do is they recycle themselves throughout, you know, this lower fourth dimensional existence, where we're rising into 5D, 6D, 7D, and they can't see us anymore, but it's not our catastrophe, it's our ascension process. And so this is kind of the scenario going on. That's their catastrophic timeline, but it keeps them alive, but not in a very happy state. It's just all about the power and control and inhabiting Earth without needing to die. And then us ascending and going into a higher form of the new Earth grid, which is, you know, based on the purified matrix of, you know, our DNA, of the global Gaia energies related to the cosmos and our multidimensional nature. So anything else ends up being dream warfare, mind control, and anything to just stick us into that program. But we just, there's no threat there as long as we know the game and we cut the cord.
Yes, I would agree with everything you said, and with the concept of what you've said. And obviously we are seeing the extreme polarity now between light and dark as people choose their path and what they're going to, what direction they're going to go. And of course, fear is what attaches people to that dark side. And love is what attaches people to the other. So
right, and also they feed on the addictions. Like, what are people? What are they longing for? What is their desire? That's why we see the, you know, lower expressions of sex. People are obsessed with making billions and millions. You know, innocent people are like, this is what it means to be a human, and they follow this thing. They're born into it. They think it's normal, but they don't realize that it's all, you know, a negation of our higher self, of really understanding what true wealth, true abundance, and true, you know, ecstatic feelings are. We rely on money. We rely on, you know, just all these lower forms. And so media is all targeting our lower chakras. And as long as we're buying into it, we're not really raising up into our consciousness and into all that we really are. And so it's not just fear. It's also where are people addicted? Where can we, you know, use their pleasure centers in a lower form rather than what true bliss and sacred union and all the beautiful things and aspects of life are? They cut us off from that because they feed us all these stereotypes and all these, you know, the it's all, you know, degrading women, and men are all about, you know, it's just a mess.
In fact, I did an interview, a video on YouTube, and I pretty much said exactly what you said. I was talking about sex for sex' sake, animalistic sex, and someone commented, "What's wrong with this Pat Corey person? Sex is great. She's all screwed up." And of course, obviously, had missed the point that what I was talking about was sex being reduced to just. I'm not talking about beautiful, healthy, loving relationships and sex, but sex for sex sake, sex for animalistic, really pretty dark energy. And yes, the lower chakras are where they get in.
Right.
Yeah. So it's important for people to keep that in mind and always remember that we can talk about these things, and our point is not to talk about them and create fear, but to talk about them and help people rise out of the fear. The awareness takes you out of the fear into the power zone, where you can affect change in your life, in your community, and for the planet.
Right. And you know, those, the lower chakra addictions that people have are based on fear. They're in fear of their own power. They're in fear of that spiritual freedom, yes, because they think they have to answer to a god, or it's all about this or that. So they either become atheists so that they can go run amok and be addicted and be in the lower form, or they're in fear and they, you know, are all about God, and they're like, oh, any mistake that they make, you know, they wonder, am I going to go to heaven and hell? And there's an extreme paranoia. So there's either a hedonistic rebellion or, you know, a paranoia and fear about doing anything out of of the box of what religion says is good or bad.
Yes, although many people are starting to escape that box, thank God.
Oh, yeah, I know. That's so old. But, I mean, some of it it's amazing how it still sticks with so many people unconsciously.
Yeah, well, the idea that a savior will come is still, it's being now transferred to the idea that an ET motherships are going to come. And somebody actually asked me, how will you know if you're going to be taken up on a ship? And the answer was, well, what do you think? That if you're a good person, you'll be selected. And if you're a bad person, you're left on a dying planet. Are we going to still apply that paradigm to what is our future encounter with alien beings? We've got to stop believing in clinging to the idea of a savior and starting to understand that we are the saviors. There's nothing to be saved from anyway.
Right, and that's what Christ was all about. It's like it's not about the being Christ returning. It's about Christ consciousness returning, and it affects each individual. And that force and frequency alone saves oneself, but it's coming directly from their higher self. And it's not just the Christ energy. It's the Christ Sophia energy. It's the balance and union of the masculine and feminine. They don't really need to be named. It's simply the masculine and feminine, the divine, of both of those coming together in union. And, you know, people are always bent on the Messiah complex or the chosen one. And I always say the chosen one is love and wisdom. And you find that within. And that's the formula that saves the individual, that feeds the collective conscious, that raises the frequency and lifts us out of this. You know, when we sit around waiting for something else to show up, we're not doing the work. We're not doing what we're really supposed to do. And that throws everybody off.
Indeed. So I know that you're very concerned about the health of Gaia, and we all are. And I'd like to ask you what your understanding is of the Japan radiation scenario and what's really coming down around the planet.
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of future scenarios did have to do with, and even in the past, in ancient history, there was radiation poisoning, and there's similar events that happened that caused, you know, major catastrophe. I mean, things got really shaken up. And so, you know, we're not hearing the truth about what happened, you know, in Japan or how dangerous the radiation levels are. And, you know, because I see, you know, this as an incredible crossroads, as we're in this 2012 shift in the photon belt and, you know, the alignments happening with the sun, Earth, and Venus, that even if our physical bodies are being compromised, we're also dealing with something that's lifting us out of the physical entrapment, where the material world and the physical world has more power than the spiritual world because that part has been so suppressed or blocked. Now it's like the awakening is happening, and that force alone, I believe, can change anything and transmute anything. And that to me is, you know, why I use the title Global Alchemist. It's like, you know, we're dealing with bioterrors, and we were dealing with all sorts of things, false flags and terrorist attacks. And I remember, you know, getting into the core of it all and shuffling my cards and really just not buying into the programs or into any of it, knowing that just the power of spirit alone would transmute this, because we are in a sense lucid dreaming, and we shift the energies and we move into higher dimensional frequencies when we're not entrapped by what the physical world is telling us. If we see it as a mirror and a reflection of not just ourselves, but us as a collective. Because if we see it always as a reflection of ourselves, we might be confused, knowing, you know, I didn't reflect 9/11, but as a collective whole, you know, this just shows how our imbalance is allowing these sort of scenarios to thrive. You know, as we're in the shift time and the rays of the unity consciousness are emanating out of the galactic core and the veils are lifting, our physical bodies are going to upgrade, our DNA is being changed, and everything is allowing the power of spirit to be stronger. And this is what's connected to the pentagram, the Illuminati worship and bring a lot of attention to the inverted pentagram. That's basically their symbol. But the upright pentagram is associated with Venus and the goddess and the four elements, earth, air, fire, water, with the fifth element being spirit. And so when people adjust themselves and their attention's on their higher self, it creates that alchemy and it turns the inverted pentagram upright again. And so this isn't just like a personal revelation. The cosmos is doing it because the Venus transits are drawing a pentagram in the sky. If you follow the orbit of Venus, it actually draws a perfect pentagram in the sky. So we have all that cosmic support. It's happening as we speak. I mean, it's written in the stars. So when we connect with that energy, we're turning this inverted pentagram that we're all sort of entrapped in, which they want. We're turning, you know, matter and the physical being more powerful, which is what they want, because they exist outside of that, because they have those technologies. They just use it to enslave us. We're turning it upright again. And that alchemy affects them. It changes what they're doing. It changes their power over us as inferior beings. And we get our sovereignty and seniority back. And And I believe that that will shift any kind of damage, cancers, radiation, and woundings of the earth. And spirit will just flood in. And just like an immune system, it just magically makes things okay in your physical body. And this is what's happening. Heart, Venus is connected to the heart chakra, and that's connected to the thymus gland, and the thymus gland is connected to the immune system. It's the heart space that boosts that energy, which in turn naturally heals the wounds, the poisons. So we find in our own physical bodies when that happens, when we crank up the immune system, we find that things magically disappear. It doesn't take a drug or an ointment. We just find things vanish. And as things come into balance, everything naturally falls into place, almost like, oh, a light beam just wiped out an underground base and all the supercomputers with our information in it. We hear about that kind of news, whether or not that's really happening. I think it is because, you know, as things are awakened, the natural magic follows. And the action plans and the paranoias and what do we do, you know, trying to stop, you know, the enemy through battle doesn't need to happen as much as just raising that frequency and understanding that magic follows when the frequencies that produce magic and miracles and well-being and healing and transformation are activated. And then the rest of it just, it's like, it's just a natural process. And we see that, you know, our human bodies in nature is a perfect example that that is a true law, not just some new age philosophy.
Indeed. Yes, I agree with you. And I have to say a whole great spirit to that. You refer to Dan Burish, who I find an extremely interesting character, and I wonder if you know anything about his encounter with the alien who was allegedly held in Area 51 named J-Rod.
Yeah.
Can you speak to that?
Well, I mean, he, you know, had contact with J-Rod, and J-Rod, you know, was very human to him in the sense that he could relate to his emotional body. There was some sort of emotional telepathic connection going on, and he had a lot of compassion for him. You know, but we have to see, you know, the grays very much are like future human selves of the global elite, because they're still sort of, you know, agents of the reptilians, and they're in fear of them in a lot of ways. And they're promoting their agenda by going to Mars and doing all this other stuff, which is different than the natural stargates opening up, which is the path of ascension, which is reconnecting us to our universal family, to where we can go anywhere in the universe without the mind control and the agendas and the, you know, destroying Mother Earth and then going over here and going over there. He was connecting with a being that seemed to be a part of that agenda who was longing to go back to his family. And so the government wasn't quite able to understand what J-Rod was all about as a future human self, whereas Dan Burish could understand it. I mean, I'm sure others did, but, you know, when you're calling them P-52, P-45s, and they're naming these beings as that, it means that they're 52,000 years, 45,000 years into the future. The ones that were 45,000 years into the future didn't really have our best interests at mind, but as they evolved to the 52,000 years into the future, they actually came back and were trying to help. But what J-Rod said to Dan Burish had to do with we're heading to Mars was one of the things he said. So it makes it a little bit questionable, but we have to understand that they're trying to promote an agenda which is what validates their existence because they've become a new species now. They want to keep themselves alive, so they return to make sure that, you know, this Mars agenda is fulfilled. But, you know, we can all find the human side. I'm sure we've met a lot of people that are agents for the dark side. And, you know, one can find that human quality, that soul heart quality. And that's what our focus should be, because if we were to talk to the love and we were to forgive, we almost help that being have an exorcism, because we're not talking to what we hate about them or what we resent. We're reaching that one place that could make all the difference to who they are by just saying, I see what you might not be able to see, but I'm willing to talk to it, rather than talk to the programmings, the controls, and the demonic possession, to give that person a chance to come forward, rather than promote more hatred and keep that person entrapped because they're basically possessed. I mean, their physical vessels are being used by these forces. So I'm all about the love and forgiveness in order to take things to the next level. And Dan definitely held, you know, a compassion for this being and ended up pushing him through a stargate so he could go home. And then he got, you know, beaten up for it. And his PhD was stripped from him and his identity and everything was really compromised. But, you know, he felt he was doing the right thing because they had held this being in captivity, you know. And it seemed like, you know, it wasn't a negative being. It was just lost in this particular timeline. And maybe it had given some of its, well, obviously, as all greys have given their power away to the reptilian agenda, which is what has produced them as agents and almost servants of them.
I never understood that J-Rod was a grey.
No, he wasn't actually, but he was P-52. And I think that's more connected to, you know, like the Nordics, but his appearance, you know, was degraded. I mean, there's different types of species. There's 7 different species of reptilians, and there's a bunch of different species of grays. But basically, the appearance being the same is the fact that, you know, the degradation, you know, the larger eyes, the white skin, and all this stuff, you know, gives them a gray appearance. But as far as, you know, there's the Zetas, there's the, you know, Tau, you know, there's, I mean, I'm not an expert in all the different races, but there's, you know, the P45s and the P52s are not just, you know, Nordics, but they're also like, you know, the Zetas. And I think that's what J-Rod was. But, you know, they're different versions of future human selves, but the Nordics are usually the ones that maintain pretty much a healthy, energetic body. But the Nordics are also the ones that bred with the reptilians that created the hybrids that the Illuminati family, you know, and the Aryans are, which they use in order to infect their bloodlines, which is why there's the 13 families. And that's all connected to Nordic and reptilian hybridization.
I'm curious as to your understanding of aliens present now on the planet, besides those that are working underground and infiltrating the government circuit. Do you agree that there is a number of Nordics walking amongst us?
There's everything walking amongst us, I would assume. I mean, really, all of us are from all over. I mean, if we're going to name one thing an alien, we might as well call ourselves aliens because, you know, we're from different star systems. We're from all over. We've, you know, we don't always take human form. Maybe in the last life we were, you know, on Venus. I mean, I know I've traveled all over the galaxy and the universe, and, you know, my origins I know the name of, and also know that, you know, our beings, when connected to the Sophia energy, is morphed into the physical planet, which is a multidimensional being. So yeah, everything's walking amongst us. There are things underground, you know, and even the space visitors, you know, have been on Earth before. And the thing is, you know, in our history, there was a lot of travel through wormholes and stargates, and it was a normal thing that people would, you know, journey. But now that they, you know, have control over them and there's gatekeepers, we're not used to that. But that used to be a norm that, you know, ships would come and go, and it was just sort of like, you know, it was like, it wasn't, you know, us all traveling like we are within the Earth, that there was a lot going on everywhere else. And so all that's being hidden from us. So the only thing that we can reference to it is all the contactees and all the different stories that are out there. But the government, as Dan Burch has said, and yeah, J-Rod is a name of a ET race in and of itself, but it's similar. I just wanted to say that again. But the government has, you know, the Looking Glass technologies create artificial stargates because it instructs one of how to, you know, locate and just manipulate. And that alone can create catastrophe because of the interference with nature, and natural law ends up creating catastrophe because it's not in the natural flow. But they've also wanted to shut down the natural stargates, which connects to our higher chakras because we're all stargates. But when one looks at the micro, the macro, you know, the planetary body is no different. And they're trying to stop, you know, the energies from being able to pour in from the galactic core. And that's what chemtrails and all these other things are for. But it's not going to work because you can't stop the creator. You can't stop source energy. It's the supreme agenda. And the bifurcation is that, you know, that this game will be played in a different arena, not something that we have to take on and deal with on a daily basis like we have been. But yeah, I don't know if I got off track on the question, but there's, you know, there's a lot of different species amongst us. I mean, there's, you know, Venus ships coming and going all the time, that there's ships circling the Earth. And, you know, the whole Elenin thing and all that's connected to Attis, which has to do with protecting the aura of Gaia with more light and more protection so that no more negative entities can come in. And so this is really no different than a human aura, an ethereal body, and a physical body. The same kind of things apply. And if humanity can step up and recognize it, you know, the solutions are about as easy as anything else, simply taking care of one's body and creating harmonious relationships and just doing, you know, what we all want. And see, the Illuminati has been very, very sophisticated in the sense that war was for profit, war is a lie, but what it does is it creates racial resentment and separation, even though it never had to do with two races having an issue or a problem. They were pulling the strings behind the surface in order to create that war so that there would be racism, there would be imbalance of masculine and feminine, and there would be power struggles, and they're just sitting back there like, ha, 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 even though none of it's really real. We're all a galactic global family, and it has nothing to do with race, color, but we're walking around with wounds from our history, and we're reading it in history books, and it's all BS.
Yeah, we go back as far as, I'm sure even before, but the Romans' famous conquer and divide concept, and it's never stopped on this planet.
Right, yeah, and the Anunnaki were really great at that. That's really the root of it, because you have the Enki and the Enlil, and it's always the Cain, the Abel, the Enki, the Enlil, Osiris and Set, the same dynamics with the brothers, and then the mother energy that's thrown off the map, and then it's, you know, the one male, like the Christ energy, that's trying to advocate for the feminine, or the brother that's trying to push her down, and that's where, you know, the roots of behavior modification and mind control are. We are, you know, really being bombarded with programs to separate us from who we really are. Naturally, we'd be ascending. Naturally, we'd be connecting to Mother Earth, co-creating. I mean, that's who we naturally are. They have to do so many sophisticated things to throw us off and make us forget that the simple solution is remembering and not being afraid to get in touch with the truth of who we are and allowing it to be free. So it's kind of funny that it's not funny, but trillions of dollars are being spent to divert us from the natural flow. And it's just like, you know, when a person realizes that they're being played, you know, it's pretty easy to break free at that point. It's just the problem is when you're not aware of it, then, you know, you think you're doing the right thing and you have all these people that are so bent on status and doing the right thing, you know, and being a good person, and they have no idea, you know, what they're really serving. If they did know, they'd change instantly, because most of this world is made up of good-hearted people that just want to do the right thing. And they're so challenged by this other stuff that they resent the messenger. They want to kill the messenger. And it's just, it's really for their benefit, because their heart's not aligned to the right forces and their heart wants to be. They just have such a hard time having that stability and what they think is reality to crumble, because they work so hard to serve that. You know, it's the biggest slap in the face to find that everything you believed in and everything you were trying to pass on to your family is a lie, especially when you have integrity. It's like such an insult.
That's why 911 is such a threat to them.
Right, and this is what's great about the Architects and Engineers for 9/11 movie coming out, because it's not about the, you know, the Alex Joneses and the conspiracy theorists coming out and saying it's an inside job. I mean, people are so bombarded with that they resent and they put them in a category all of their own. Oh, those are conspiracy theorists. When you have architects and engineers saying there's no way these buildings could collapse, absolutely no way in hell they could collapse in the way that they did unless it was either controlled demolition or something else. And when people start to see, wait a second, these are people who went to college. These are people, you know, who aren't, you know, all about conspiracy. These are just people who have families and this is their profession. They're either in the profession of demolition or the profession of engineering and, you know, building skyscrapers, or in the profession of knowing, you know, physics and how fire works and what temperatures would make metal melt. And so they have this great movie coming out that's going to come out really soon with all the experts all over the world that are saying this is impossible. This has never happened before. We've built skyscrapers and not even a huge office fire can make anything crumble, especially symmetrically. And when this movie comes out, most of the people that refuse to believe 9/11 was an inside job because to them it's conspiracy theory are going to hear tons and tons of experts say it's absolutely impossible that this could have happened in the way that we see.
The problem is that some people, even if they have the experts telling them, are clinging so much. Let me give you an example. A friend of mine said, Patricia, I can't believe what you're telling me. And I said, well, I'm not asking you to automatically believe it because I'm telling you. I'm asking you to consider it. He said, no, you don't understand. I can't believe it. If I believe it, my world collapses. And I said, why? Why does your world collapse if you understand the mechanics of the dark forces on this planet? And he said, because it shoots my whole life is a joke. I said, yeah. Well, that really frightens me that you have to, your life crumbles because truth enters into your system.
And that's
how
that's,
about if you accept and embrace the possibility of that and explore it and then detach why your life has to crumble because of knowing the truth.
And that's the sad part, because their identity is so wrapped up into culture, society, government that, yeah, people's worlds crumble. If this isn't truth, then who am I? They don't even know who they are outside of it all. And the thing is, we have to know who we are without material possessions, without government, without religion, without anything but us, and be secure in that and say, you know what, all this could be destroyed, but you know what, we have ourselves to fall back on. And if we don't find strength and identity or safety and security in that, and it's always about the external, and that's who we are, and that's how we identify ourselves, some trend, some, you know, cultural fad, some sort of, you know, this is what women are, this is what a beautiful woman looks like, this is what a real man is, and all these stupid programmings, and then all of a sudden they're ripped away and people don't know who they are anymore. It's like, you got to know who you are without anything but you. And that's the thing with soul work. You fall back on yourself, you know who you are, and anything around you it could fall apart and be a total lie, and there's something to fall back on. There's a strong foundation. And people need to be glad that they're being challenged like that, because they need to ask themselves, well, what do I have if all this gets ripped away from me? Because it doesn't necessarily mean it has to come from government. What if their house burns down? What if they're in a natural disaster? We're always threatened to be stripped of the things we identify with. But if we don't know who we are on the other side, yes, we're going to have nervous breakdowns. Yes, we're going to be lost and in chaos. And so this is the time right now to prepare. Find who you are outside of all of it, and then you're going to be able to handle the ups and downs of the next couple of years, which are going to be really shaky. And there's going to be all sorts of info, disinfo, fact and fiction coming in. And that's another reason to be really strong in the self, because you're either going to be led astray or you're going to be angry. If you know who you are, you can decipher fact from fiction, but you're not reliant upon it. You're reliant upon yourself, your intuition, your connection to source, and you can consider other ideas and be inspired by them and have them activate your own free thinking, but you don't have to just follow. And that's really where the biggest dead end for all of us has been.
Indeed. In fact, I have to say that I'm asking people to be discerning about everything that's coming in now, because the false information is rampant already, and we aren't even at the crisis point where, if you consider that the entire planet awaits this 2012 passage of December 21st, 2012, you can imagine how forces will manipulate that process or that timeline for their own benefit. So people are going to really have to get clear on their own perception, their own experience, and start discerning what looks good, what looks like truth and wisdom, but has other agendas. And this is a tough game. But we came here as spirit warriors by Karaki, didn't we?
By what?
By Karaki.
Oh, right.
We came in as spirit warriors by Karaki, and we are here to understand it and assist.
Absolutely. I mean, this is all about liberation and people, you know, it's like, let's not have this lead to just chaos and disruption. I mean, this is our chance to just break free of the chains and, you know, to look at our families and the people that we love for that security and stability, not the government, not the belief systems, not the school systems, and say, you know what, stop being so crumbled by this. Look to each other. Look at the love in your life. Look at the family that you have. Look at the beautiful earth. This is the truth. This is the structure. This is the government, the law of nature, the law of love in the universe. That's the real law. And, you know, I just think it's great. I think, you know, this is a really positive thing is for people to start to realize it, because, you know, they're already announcing, the Vatican's announced and other newspapers are announcing, we need new world order to save the earth. Or Vatican said, we need new world order in the financial system. And why is the Vatican talking about finances anyway? And this is a big laugh, because this has been so prophesized, but even more of a prophecy has been, you know, this ascension process. And, you know, ascension, you know, isn't an attainment. It's simply removing the veil and saying, wait a second, not any of that is who we are. Let's just get rid of it. And then, you know, the truth is that we're rising and rising and rising, not because we attained anything, but simply because we remembered and we pulled ourselves away from the distracting and invasive forces. And I just think it's extremely positive. So, yeah, people are going to get shaken up. But you know what? They shouldn't take for granted the love that's in their life. And that's, you know, the foundation of security and stability, because that's where the miracle and magic happens. I mean, I lived off the grid for so long and I didn't have anything, but, you know, I was taken care of. The universe provided for me, unless I was in fear and getting into panic. And it reminded me real quick, I can't manifest in this vibration. I can't create anything in this vibration. And the minute I let go of it and I just was in the now and in the moment, literal miracles happen. And I've seen it in other people's life. And so when people feel shaken up and they're losing their belongings and their bank account doesn't look good enough and they're really freaking out, everything that they're used to is being stripped from them, just, you know, just word of caution, just be in the moment, be in the now. You will manifest and create what you need. Just like the body does when it gets insulted, it knows how to heal itself. There's some wounds that might linger longer, but if you don't gloss it over and deny it and you're present with it, you can work on it in that instant moment. You don't have to carry it for years.
Indeed. I hate to take you off this track, but I really did want to get back to the Mars recruitment agenda, since you were you had an encounter with someone you describe as Agent X.
Agent X.
And how you and your friend Keith Leah were approached to be recruited to do what? To move, to colonize Mars. I'd love to have you elaborate this, because it's not clear from what we've already discussed.
Oh, right. Yeah, I met him at a festival, and I just, you know, thought it was just a normal encounter, and we, you know, formed a relationship, and I was living in D.C., and he would go there, but then he would go to secret meetings, and from there, you know, he was talking about Mars, and everything was very secretive. I can't tell you who these people are yet, and this and that, but we're going to, and I just didn't take it seriously. I just sort of kind of blew it off, thinking, you know, well, I can talk him into staying on Earth. This is, you know, probably long-term in the future, just, you know, something about, you know, some breakthrough and some humanity traveling to Mars. You know, I had no idea the level and degree it was, and, you know, secrecy and manipulation, and he was under mind control because he was activated very often through codes they would send him and do missions, and 9 months into the relationship, I found out that he was sent to find me and that he didn't meet me in the normal way. And I had gotten on the phone with my friend in the very beginning, told her about him and that I was, you know, he was talking about Mars and being recruited to go to Mars, and she contacted him interested. And that's how she got involved. She wasn't approached, but through me, she reached out to him. And then I was telling her as I was experiencing all this unfolding, this is not good. You know, I would separate yourself from all this as quickly as possible. Don't get entangled in this, because I started to research the names of the people that he was going to these secret meetings with. And they were connected to technologies like HARP and artificial telepathy, military abductions, and this and that. But back then, none of this was available on the web. It took 2 weeks of research for me to even link the names to that, because they had destroyed a lot. And it was funny, because in a lot of old emails, you know, one of the recruiters said, you know, I destroyed a lot of my sordid past. And I was like, okay, ring, ring, ring. I'm going to, you know, find this sordid past. I think that was the clue, on top of the fact that I had a few prophetic dreams, one of which, you know, really in the beginning launched me on breaking free. You know, I had a dream that I had a choice, and I made the choice, and it was to stay on Earth, and an alignment happened, and the ship to Mars, you know, disappeared without me on it, because this voice from the sky said, you got to make a choice and make it now. This was before I knew this was like connected to black ops and all these different technologies and how secretive it was, but it gave me enough strength to really just keep my eyes wide open. And when I told Agent X that, my partner, who was under their programming a lot of the time, you know, he freaked out, and at times when he wasn't activated by them, would leak me information about what this was all about, what it was connected to, why I was recruited. And then when I started to speak about what I knew they were associated with and what it was all about, they realized that I busted them. They didn't think that I would, because it was presented to me as a positive false flag. They have negative false flags like terrorism, but they have positive false flags where they want to lure people in based on saying, oh, this will protect the human race. Oh, you know, this is to protect you from cataclysms, and you should be so lucky. We're taking you to Mars, and we're going to take care of you, and you'll have this great position of power. That was a big red flag. First of all, being born with a mission so profoundly connected to Gaia, that alone was enough for me not to go to Mars. And all this other yip-yap, you know, it was like, uh-uh, I'm sorry. That's not what Mother Earth has in store for us. Divine will, nature does not need us to evacuate. She needs us to co-create. And that's when I realized that they're pushing all the buttons to create these disasters, and they want us to go to Mars and what, then come back and rule? I mean, that's when I really realized this is dark, this is bad. I tried to convince them they're trying to turn you into a robot. That didn't go too well. You know, ordered all this Oregon and rare earth magnets, trying to place it on where I thought he might be chipped, and he didn't want anything to do with it. So, but eventually, yeah, I started to talk about it, and I moved me and my boys down the street. A lot was still going on, you know, just a lot of paranoia. There's a dead body in my car. You don't realize I'm doing this to protect you. And, you know, and a part of me was like, well, what if that's the case? You know, I looked at every angle, but, you know, I could just, you know, I realized when I found out they were connected to artificial telepathy, that the beings he was talking to implement this Mars mission weren't even real. It was like, this was like Wizard of Oz. They were behind the scenes. And not only that, they had code names like Penguin and Falcon and Owl, which, like, you know, it just gets even weirder. And I just, yeah, I mean, there's legitimate contact people have with extraterrestrials, but this was something where they can make you think they're having contact. And they were giving him like spiritual truths to make him think that this was a great service he was doing to humanity, and it was all, you know, a lie. So they were playing him in a similar positive false flag way, and he thought he was just being this great person. And you know, and that's another rude awakening. And they do that to super soldiers and all sorts of people. They'll manipulate you based on your goodwill, and then you realize you haven't served the light at all. And before I was embroiled in it to the depths that I could have been, I recognized it and got away. You know, instead of being like, ooh, look what I'm doing. I'm protecting the human genome. I'm going to Mars. And it was like, wait a second. What about all the people that aren't going to be invited? This isn't fair. This is all hierarchy BS. And, you know, this is not what I'm here to serve. I'm devoted to Gaia. I'm devoted to the good in humanity. And I'm going to ride this out even if I am destroyed in a cataclysm. I'm not afraid of death. I'm afraid of being controlled, and I refuse to play with the dark side. So that was enough for me to get out of it, and that passion and will, you know, was enough for me to pretty much be free of them.
Wow. That's an amazing story, people. I promised you an incredible conversation, and I'm sure you'll agree we've had it, considering that it's already time to sign out, and it feels like a nanosecond. But then again, we are talking about multidimensional reality and zipping out of the timeline here and there. So, Laura, I have to, unfortunately, I have to say goodbye for now. But before I do, I would like to ask you if you have any one message you would like to leave with the people who have been captivated by your story today.
Yeah, well, gosh, I mean, there's just a lot of crazy changes going on. And for people to really, you know, put their attention on how incredibly positive and transformative it is, you know, we can be taken into victim consciousness or into the spirit warrior who rises into one's divine self and is just simply in the beingness of it all, really activating the incredible miracles and incredible opportunities we have to embrace our highest potential. I do readings. If people check out my website, cosmicgaia2012.com, I do readings specifically to help people in this transition time, to help them deprogram, to help them find their strength and their divine spark and their, you know, just connection to higher self, to really help them get through this next couple years really activated in strength and, you know, being grounded and just really prepared. So I just think, you know, the more internal work, the better. A lot of external information coming at us all the time, and just to be very wary, get to know yourself, find who you are outside of all the attachments and identities that we've grown accustomed to, and really embrace, you know, that part of yourself that's longing for you to return, which is, you know, completely free and completely divine and very, very powerful, very, you know, just in most need of activation to get out of, you know, this entrapment. And it's a very liberating, beautiful experience. And so I'm just here to help, you know, in this process with everybody.
Well, thank you. Thank you for all you're doing, all you're revealing, and all you're bringing forward. That's it, folks. It's the end of the hour. You have been listening to Beyond the Matrix with Patricia Corey and the exceptional Laura Eisenhower, who I hope I will have back on. And I'd love to have your feedback on this interview, so be sure to contact me at info@syrianrevelations.net and let me know how you've been impacted by what you've heard today. All righty, this is Pat Corey signing out. Nanu, nanu. That's 2 weeks from now. Thanks, Laura. Bye-bye.
Okay, thank you.